Welcome to the Berry Nation podcast, where we support the bariatric community with humor, humility, and honesty. My name is Jason. Today, I am joined by three amazing members of the Berry Nation community, Deanne, Herb, and Megan. Today, we're going to talk about what we wish we knew before we had the surgery and some of the things we might wish we knew along the way that kind of hit us after the fact. I'm going to start with letting you guys introduce yourselves. Deanne, how about you?
Hi, I'm Deanne. I'm from the Pacific Northwest, south of Seattle, about 30 miles. And I have had two bariatric surgeries. My first surgery was in 2006. I had the gastric lap band. And then in 2021, I had a revision to the duodenal switch.
Awesome. All right. Herb, how about you?
Yeah, my name's Herb. I'm in Chicago, and I had VSG surgery in May of 2021.
Fantastic. Megan, last but not least.
Hi, I'm Megan. I am in Dinellon, Florida, a little tiny town. I'm about 2 hours southwest of Jason. I had VSG December 14th of 2020.
Awesome. Fantastic. So today's conversation is really just going to kind of be about the things we've learned, since we've had surgery and kind of along the way. So, Deanne, do you have anything that you can think of that you wish you would have known before your very first surgery?
Very first surgery, although I thought that I was right there and this was going to be the magic that helped me, I wish that versus my stomach being banded, that I had known more about the mindset. It wasn't even talked about whatsoever at that time, not a bit. And I had a really rough journey with it, and a lot of malfunctions with the port part of it and had to have it replaced, and then some trauma happened, and then life happened, and I the struggles with no help whatsoever from the bariatric center that I was with.
Yeah, that's unfortunate, the side of things where the aftercare kind of, at least in my situation, when the aftercare failed, it really wasn't that big of a deal because it was just me not knowing what I'm doing. And I went out and found and made my, my own way. But when it comes to a situation where you're actually struggling and going through things like that, it is a lot harder and like you said, the mindset portion of things is a little crazier on that aspect. And plus, you also think too that, they've introduced a foreign body into you. So there's something in there that's not really, that you didn't come with, not really supposed to be there that way. So it's hard for, there's lots of layers to that mind, to the mindset and the lack of support that you get from it.
Yeah. And the band was the smallest band that they could put on me. And I still could have no fluid put into it whatsoever. So basically I just had a lap band that did nothing. And it caused me a lot of years of not being able to eat foods that were proper. Slider foods were perfect. Starbucks was my number one fan because it kept me warm and it went down. And then when I came to 21, or March of 21, I started not even be able to keep liquids down.
Are you having bariatric or revision surgery related to other weight loss procedures and feeling nervous about the post-surgical pain management? Check out yourxfactor.com to learn more about steps to take to prepare yourself both physically and mentally for your surgery.
And or get them down. And that's when I knew that something bad was going on and I had to move forward with it. But I felt like such a failure that I never approached anybody about what I was going through.
So well, and that's kind of the, you know, that's rough in itself, because you're not only malnutritioned at that point, like you're basically starving yourself to death and dehydrating yourself to death, and you don't, you know, having the shame behind you feeling like you failed at that and not having the support to tell you otherwise made it just that much harder to even try. Like the mindset is something completely different than even just the aspect that you were dealing with. So I could see how that would be, you know, even kind of twice as hard.
Mm-hmm. It was. And then I finally decided that I would go back to the same bariatric surgeon, because I was afraid of going to a new one to say that I had failed. And it was almost like scripted. He had a plan what he was going to do. We powered through all the things, and in July of 21, I had a 10 and a half hour procedure and sent home that night.
It took them 10 and a half hours to remove the band and then do the switch?
Yes. Yeah. Because I had so much erosion and scar tissue, and I had been through a couple other things. I ended up having cancer, and so there was scar tissue from that, and it was a very long surgery, and I got sent home at 11:45 at night.
What did they explain their reasoning behind just kicking like booty out?
That you can heal better at home.
Huh. Well, if that's the case, I guess home healthcare would be a thing more than hospitals would be a thing. That doesn't really compute to me, but hey, what do I know? I don't have a white coat.
It was very different. I've seen the surgeon one time since I've had my procedure, and I have met with the nurse practitioner only through Zoom. And I actually have just recently found a new bariatric doctor.
And that sounds like that was probably the best way to go, because it doesn't seem like the other one. How do you do a 10 and a half hour surgery on somebody and not only send them home the same night, but don't follow up with them in person after one time? Like, you don't want to check the scars, the healing. You don't want to know what's going on. A virtual camera session cannot explain to you what is going on with someone's body.
Yeah. I had a 1 week follow up. And that was it. That's all I have seen him.
Well, yeah, because nothing could go wrong after 1 week.
All that I've done is just follow up. I sent pictures. They wanted to see the scars, so I sent pictures.
Well, that's cool. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
I don't know what part of medical school that is, but like I said, I'm not a doctor, so I don't know.
So it was, and so, you know, what my journey has been my journey, but that is what I wish I would have known, that the lack of care, I wish for both procedures that would have been brought. I didn't even get the binder. I got a sheet of paper.
I mean, damn. My binder only has one sheet of paper in it that's worth a damn.
Hi friends, it's April. We are so excited to officially announce that ProCare Health is the official vitamin of Berry Nation. We were introduced to ProCare Health at the first Bariatric Society retreat in San Diego, and we have all fallen in love with our product and with the people behind the company. Jason, Natalie, and I have all made the switch to ProCare Health daily bariatric multivitamins, and we are seeing huge results. We invite you to check out ProCare Health by visiting them online at www.procarenow.com and use the code BERRYNATION for 10% off your order. And you guys, this even applies to vitamin subscription services. So if you want your vitamins delivered every month or every 90 days, that 10% off is going to apply to that subscription. See what I mean about patient forward, patient centered? ProCare is amazing, and we are so excited to be partnered with them. Welcome to the Berry Nation family, ProCare Health.
So, I mean, it's kind of the same thing. The rest of it was just a waste. They wasted a 3-ring binder and a bunch of paper. So,
yeah.
I mean, you know, I don't really ever use it anymore anyway. But no, the hard part about that is that we go through 6 months, most of us, some way longer than that, of pre-op. It's pre-optics. Yeah. It's all these appointments. They want to know. They want to be in your face. They want to talk to you. They want to sell the program. And then the second the check clears, they're like, all right, I'm going to take it easy. Like, yeah, have a good day. And yeah. That's it. Like, you're just ghosted. And sometimes you get to meet with a PA and sometimes the doctor. And that's, and sometimes you never see them again. The only reason I saw my surgeon again was when Sarah went in to have her pre-op stuff done. And I was in a room with him. He kept kind of looking at me and I pulled my mask down. And he was like, wait a minute. And I pulled my before and after picture up. And he was like, oh, damn. And I'm like, yeah. Remember me? Like, I guess you never thought you'd see me again. And that's the crazy thing is there needs to be more. I believe there should be more post-op care than pre-op care. Like, give me six appointments ahead of time, but I'm gonna need about 10 after because we got it.
Absolutely. And not, and I understand that during that one time, the time we did have to have them done virtually, but I don't think there's any reason now that I would had to have been seeing them through virtual.
For myself, I definitely could have done virtual because I had luckily I was fortunate enough to have zero issues. Mm-hmm. I could have done all my stuff virtually and would have been fine. But, for somebody like to go through what you went through and feel like you're just on an island is just, that's wild to me. And that's one of the reasons why, April Natalie and I are so passionate about trying to get all of that changed, because there's no reason that anybody should go through something as monumental as this is, and as mind altering as what we've done, and just be left to be like, I don't know, figure it out. Like, I don't know what the hell I'm doing. Like, what do you mean? So,
and I would ask for nutritionist. I'd ask for therapy, and their answer to me, the PA's answer to me each time was, well, they don't really understand the duodenal switch. And I'm like, that's not the answer that I want to hear. The answer I want is, I don't know one now, but let me see if I can help find one for you.
She's like, nobody understands what we did to you. So center,
yeah. And the center that I went to, that I've changed to, has nutritionist I've seen twice now, and I've scheduled therapy. And so it's very, it is frustrating that the center that I went to of excellence was, for me, far from excellent, far.
Well, and that's such a broad term we're finding out, because there's so, like, you would assume that if you're a center of excellence or just centers, like if you can do and operate this, if you provide this surgery, the care pre and post needs to be the same across the board. There shouldn't be anybody having to travel to another state, another city, another country just to have a procedure done, because nothing's the same. It's a coin toss on who you're going to get, if they're going to be worth a damn, and what the program provides. And that to me is just, it's nauseating, because that's how I figured out originally that there was more people out there like me when I found April. Because I'm like, if you live on the opposite end of the country than I do, and your care was as bad as mine was, like, there, I know we're not alone. Like, this isn't just, just happened to be two people that ran into each other that happened to have, crappy aftercare. So it's just something that absolutely needs to change moving forward. And it's something we're going to work with.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Man. So would you say anything different for your second surgery versus the first one?
The second surgery, I found Berry Nation. And that has been, because I can guarantee that if I had not found you guys, I would not be where I am today. And I feel that it's the mindset and movement is, and I struggle in movement. I struggle so hard in movement. I have had a great loss of weight, and even from the beginning, from my highest weight, recorded weight, to today, I have lost 200 pounds. And so, you know, I have that to thank for the surgery, but I don't have the thanks to them for what I have to go forward with it, because it's a journey forever. And I hope, and I would know, want people to know that that it's not a one-time thing. It's not going to happen without a lot of work, and just to be prepared for that.
Yeah. Well, that's one of the things that we hear routinely when we talk to people about, you know, Berry Nation, what we created, and kind of the things that we provide, is just simply that. Like, there's so many people that feel like they were just kind of out there searching for whatever they could find.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I did that on my first one.
Yeah. I think we all did at one point.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm thankful and grateful that we were able to provide this not only for ourselves, but for everyone else that we've helped. So yeah. That's amazing. And we're just glad that we were able to do that for you.
Yeah. So that would be my number one thing, is to, that I wish I would have known that you need to have a community, you need to have support, and you need to have Berry Nation to keep moving forward.
We're not giving Deanne a dime to say this thing.
And I will say it forever.
Yeah, well, we appreciate you very much. We do. Indeed. Well, Herb, what about you, sir?
Okay, hear me out. I went into surgery thinking it would be the only treatment I would need to overcome my chronic disease of obesity. About 6 months into my journey, I realized I was wrong. I was missing community, I was missing education from the experts, and I was missing a safe place to just go and connect with other patients who understood what I was going through. That's why Jason, Natalie, and I created the Berry Nation membership community. It is a safe and inclusive place for patients to gather with one another, to learn from the experts and each other. Check out the Berry Nation community today by visiting https://berrynation.mn.co to see what we have created. In Berry Nation, you belong, and you don't have to do this journey alone.
It's an interesting question. I'm coming up almost on my 2-year anniversary, so I took some time to think about that question. And I think what I wish I had known was what I was so worried about pre-surgery is not what I needed to worry about at all. I was actually approved for my surgery well before I actually had my surgery. And it was almost 18 months before I actually had surgery in 2021. And I was so deep in Reddit and Instagram and Facebook and all these places, just doing so much research and trying to figure out what the surgery was, what are horror stories, you know, what could go wrong, you know, why shouldn't I do this? And I wish I had sort of, I'm very fortunate I had a great program. I wish I would have trusted those voices more. I wish I could have found a place like Berry Nation earlier, just a place to sort of quiet out those voices, you know, that I was listening to. And it turns out all of those things that I was worried about aren't what I need to be worried about at all. You know, I got to my year point, and I was really fortunate. Surgery went really well. Weight loss went really well. And I got to a year and I was like, oh, there's other things I need to work on. And it's exactly what Diane had mentioned, you know, mindset. Those are the things that folks really need to focus on, you know, healing your relationship with food, healing your relationship with movement. You know, the hardest thing for me has been, how do I build habits? You know, the food has sort of worked itself out, but it's the other stuff. It's the drinking my water every day, the, you know, getting my movement in that every day. Those habit building exercises or keys are things that, you know, I've struggled with, and I wish I would have known that. Those are things that I should have been researching instead of the deep, dark corners of Reddit.
Well, and that, I mean, but honestly, though, there was so much, depending on where you went, you could always find the negative in any of it. Like, you could find it on Facebook for sure. You can find it on YouTube. Like, when that's legitimately, like, I did zero research before I dove into this. And I'm glad I did, because I would have been just like you. I would have been like, I'm not doing that shit. But initially, like, I want to say 5 years before I actually had it, I was approached about it by a doctor. And I was just kind of like, yeah, that's not for me. I got this. Thanks, buddy. And, you know, proceeded to gain another like 80 pounds. So I knew everything except for that. But yeah, I mean, YouTube was a big one that was like, if you searched VSG, it came up with horror story after horror story. And it would be like, oh, what, I didn't know, right, this and that, and that. And everything was like, what happened to me? And it was all this stuff, because it was shock value. People wanted views, people wanted clicks, they needed all the, you know, all the revenue. So, but I legitimately, like, the only thing I researched that I was really kind of just ridiculously naive about beforehand, when it came to that, was when Sarah came to me. It was like, I'm going to go to Mexico and have my this surgery. And I was like, you mean to wake up in a bathtub without a kidney? Like, no, man, we're not doing that. Wake up in a bathtub full of ice, like with your kidney gone? Like, no, we're not doing that. And she's like, medical tourism is a thing. And I'm like, no, we got to. But yeah, so the more I looked into it, the more I realized how ridiculous I was. But yeah, no, I mean, and that's one of those things. Like, the horror stories are out there. You can find them if you look hard enough. But
yeah, and don't get me wrong, you know, I actually, there was a group of us that found each other on Reddit. I don't know, through some good luck. And, you know, these people on WhatsApp, we had a little messaging group of five or six of us that helped really quiet a lot of that noise. And like, these are people that had surgery right at the same time as me, and I could ask them the questions and it was an immediate answer. And that was really helpful. So you just have to find your people and sort of not, you know, drown in all the information, a lot of it bad, that's out there.
Well, and that's good, though, because you were able to find a community, kind of pre-community, that you found later. So it's good to see that. It just proves that community helps in all aspects of this journey, you know, whether
100%.
It's pre-post or otherwise, because the amount of people that we've seen come into Brady Nation lately that are pre-op has been staggering. Like, the group that Natalie leads in there on pre-op has just grown exponentially. And it's awesome, because that means that surgery centers are putting the word out there and realizing that this really is a thing. Because, you know, we talked about it the other day, April and I were talking about it. I'm like, if you really think about 250,000 people a year have the surgery, but only 30% that go through an initial consult actually have the surgery. So that's all those people that are out there that don't go back after they have the consultation because of this same thing, like what Herb was saying. They get worried. They freak out. Their family tells them they know so-and-so, sister-in-law's baby cousin Tracy, that had it done, and she gained all her weight back. And so you're going to do it too. It's going to happen to you too. And so everybody has a horror story like that. And nobody, you know, if they don't know what they don't know, they're automatically going to believe that, think that's what it's going to happen, and then they just don't do it. So there's a large portion of the community that should be getting it that just aren't, because they don't understand. So the more people we can get this information to and have, you know, show them that community is out there and that they have somebody that they can kind of follow along and say, oh, well, they did it this way and it worked for them. So, you know, it's going to be able to work for me. I think that's one of the things that's kind of missing in the community, is because that misinformation is everywhere. So you've got to figure out where, you know, you can, where you want to pull the information from that's kind of, like you said, Herb, going to quiet that noise down.
No, I agree 100%.
So that the only thing you could think of that you thought about pre-op?
Oh, there's many others, but I don't want to hog all the time. Megan, what about you?
So for me, like, I was thinking about this, and I agree with Dan and Herb, like, the mindset, the horror stories. I didn't have surgery for years because of the horror story. It took my best friend doing it first for me to do it to make sure. I was like, hey, you could do it. I could do it. But for me, I didn't realize, like, the grieving process afterwards of, like, grieving the food that I could no longer eat. I remember there was a point about, I think I was like 4 to 6 months out, and like crying over not being able to eat certain things. And thinking, what did I do? Why can't I eat this? And I just had a conversation with my dad recently about it, is that I can eat those things now. But grieving, like, I didn't realize how much I would have to grieve over, like, food and what I could and couldn't eat. Or then also learning, I didn't think, you know, I was like, oh, I'll be fine. I'll have the surgery. I won't have to, you know, I'll be good. I won't have food addiction. I won't binge eat anymore. All of that'll go away. No, it did not. So learning how to like just not eat my feelings and grieving the thought of, well, my life is over because I can't soothe myself with food.
Yeah, no, 100%. I actually, which I've told the story before, I almost rescheduled my surgery because of some of the things I had coming up, because there was like this amazing potluck at work that I wanted to go through. Like there was shit that I really wanted to do. And I'm like, if I schedule this surgery now on a Wednesday, I think it was, my liquid diet starts Monday. And that does not give me time to do any of the things. So at that point, I threw myself a hell of a food funeral all weekend long and just went, you know, crazy thinking I was never going to be able to eat all these things. So I'm trying to run all over town and find all these places, things that I want to eat, and then turn around, you know, 3 years out and I can eat everything that I did in the food funeral and kind of feel like a jackass now, just in way less, you know, quantity. But, you know, those are the things, like you think about, you lose much more than weight. You lose the former, you know, you feel like you're going to lose the former person that you were. You feel like you're not going to be the same internally, externally, mentally. Like there's a lot of things that go into the loss, you know, that's more than just the pounds. So the grieving process is something that they do not tell you. I kind of feel like there's a list of things they don't tell you because they don't want you to not have a surgery at all. So they're just going to be like, we're just going to keep that quiet and let you figure it out on your own, which it's a hell of a sales tactic, but it sucks when you're dealing with people. So, but yeah, no, it definitely is like the mourning part of it really does come into play, because you start thinking about, well, am I going to be the same person, you know, as everything changes? Because there's really not a lot that's the same post-op as there was pre-op. Like we move different. We think different. The cloudy memory thing is gone. Like you use more of your mind for things that don't revolve around food. So there's a lot of changes going on, not to mention the hormonal changes that happen at the same time. So it's just kind of like you're kicked off the edge of a roller coaster and be like, okay, you ready? Nope. Okay, good. Bye. And just kind of let you go without a handbrake. So.
Yeah. I wish they also told us about like the hormonal changes. Cause I was also, when I had surgery, I was only like 10 months postpartum from having my last baby on top of it. So they didn't warn me about that either. Like you just had a baby less than a year ago and now you're having surgery. Let's just throw all that out there. He did not mention that at all to me about the hormonal changes. I had no idea.
That's like making the worst casserole ever. Throw shit that does not go together in one pot and go, man, we'll see what happens. So for them to not be like, hey, just so you know, all those mood swings and things you've been having that have been going on, about to get real bad. Like I just don't understand how. That's kind of the thing for me. Like I believe all of that stuff should go into it. The crazy thing for me that I thought was wild was how the psychological aspect of it was so short. The hour meeting I had with the psychologist was ridiculous. The 2.5 hour click all the boxes for the MMPI test for the, you know, make sure I'm not crazy was ridiculous too. You know, they want to make sure I was just mentally stable enough to have, you know, the surgery and that's it. Like they didn't care about anything else going on. They just wanted to make sure that I could handle that part so the liability was clear. So to me, the fact that they don't push that more and talk about, like, I think there's a way you can package that whole situation and it not be scared. Like, you've got to have somebody that's professional enough to be able to sit down and go, okay, here we're going to go over a few things. This is some of the things you may experience after you have the surgery. And I, you know, that's one of the things, because I sat through it, you know, with my wife being, you know, in the mental health field, explaining to her how I felt like it just wasn't adequate enough. And she kind of backed me up on that whole situation, because when she went through it, it was much of the same, because we had the same insurance, so the same, and we went through the same surgery center. So it was just kind of point and click kind of thing. So, you know, not knowing that those challenges were going to come up, and like I experienced much of what each and every one of you had gone through. Like they, There's a lot of things for me that I wish I would have known. You know, one of the biggest things is, like Herb said, like, this is forever. There is, like, everybody wants the after, but there is no after. The after is when you're gone. Like, when you no longer exist, that's the after. There's, you know, post-op is for the rest of your life. Like, so that's why when people, you know, think that if they don't have it down in the first 6 months, that it's, you know, that it's just going to, the wheels are going to come off the wagon. And it's, you know, you want to tell, you know, we always tell them, like, no, you have the rest of your life to figure it out. Like, you're not going to become a gym rat all of a sudden because you had surgery. Like, they don't fix that part. They don't just, it's not like they download software and go, oh, now you go to the gym all the time. It's something that, you know, it's habits that you build. It's things that you have to, you know, that you have to actively do. And your body's going to eventually call for that movement. So you just have to react when it happens. So, and that's kind of one of those things. Like, I knew early on, and I, you know, I've, you know, in my pre-op process, when I was trying to lose weight all the years of time, I've done gym stints, I've done the things, I've gone for, you know, consistently for years at a time. So it wasn't foreign to me, but it still wasn't easy just to jump up and go, oh, well, now that I can walk to the car without being out of breath, I'm going to go to the gym for 2 hours. Like, it's just one of those things that it's kind of a misnomer that people just assume is going to happen. The same way, like Megan said, like, oh, I'm not going to be addicted to food anymore. But like, for myself, the hardest thing was I didn't feel like I had a food addiction at all. I just thought, I was like, well, I'm just hungry, so I just eat until I'm full and I'm good. Like, I can just not do that if I don't have the capacity. I was way wrong. Because I still, to the, like, I still, even to right, like yesterday, Sarah had to, we went to dinner with some friends, and Sarah legit had to talk me into splitting a meal with her, because I was like, no, I need this, because if I, and I was right back to 468 pounds, where I used to be, argue with her at the table, be like, no, I have to have this, because I'm not going to pay money and go out to eat to still be hungry when I leave. And she's like, yeah, but you're not going to be hungry when you leave. You do this all the time. And it took that to kind of snap me back to where I realized that she was right. I do still do a lot of those things. And I don't want to, like, for the first year and a half, almost 2 years, I didn't do anything. And now that I'm further out, my capacity's changed and I can eat a little bit more. And so now I think I have to have all of these things. And for her to sit down and kind of tell me in the way she did, it snapped me. Like I said, it snapped me right back to being, you know, my heaviest weight and really freaking out about, well, what if I'm not full? Well, guess what? That's not the only food on the earth. So if I'm still hungry later, I can eat something at home, or I can eat something. So, like, it's not a huge deal. Like, I didn't just eat up the last of the food. So, though, you know, those things to me, it was a hard realization for me to admit that I was addicted to food, because I'm somebody that has never smoked, never drank, never done a drug, never done any of that, because my addiction runs deep in my family. So I had made, from a very young age, I was like, never doing any of that. And I was fortunate enough to stay that way, you know, at 40, now 47 years old, I'm like, what's going on? But I just realized that I was picking another addiction up that still was just as deadly to myself as some of those other things, because liquor doesn't kill you overnight. It takes a long time for liquor to kill you. And, you know, it's the same thing with food. Food is a very slow but imminent death if you continue to misuse it the same way you would alcohol or drugs. So it was a very hard realization for me to pick up the fact that I should have seen that, but I didn't. And didn't want to admit it when I did see it. So I know I'm not alone in that, but that was a hard one for me.
I still remember being out for my first birthday post-surgery and going to dinner and being really excited with my husband. And that's what we did every year. And I have never been more depressed for a birthday, because there are all these things I wanted to order and I couldn't eat them. And I almost cried afterwards. And I was like, what is this? And I think what would have been helpful pre-surgery was having someone say, what are the ways you use food to celebrate, to comfort, to do X, Y, and Z? And what are some different, I want to say, healthier ways to replace that instead? I think those are, you know, really key mental pieces that could have set me up more for success, instead of getting into the situation and be like, oh dang, like I didn't realize this about myself, that I was using food as celebration. And, you know, I've tackled that problem now, but I really wish I would have gone into, you know, my journey knowing that that was something I was going to have to face.
Yeah,
I agree. That first birthday, I was like, I was depressed on my birthday. I was like, this is not how I wanted to celebrate my birthday. This is not, I've celebrated, you know, 30 birthdays, 31 birthdays before a certain way. And now all of a sudden, I can't celebrate how I've been so used to celebrating. And so that was probably like one of the toughest. And then I also had my surgery right before Christmas. And Christmas is always like, you know, I'm from an Italian family. So it's 7-course Italian dinner, like for Christmas. And I was on liquids on Christmas. And that was probably the worst Christmas of my life because of that. And I was not prepared for that at all.
Yeah. My surgery was in July. My birthday's in August. And we go camping with our entire family for the week. Grandkids, nieces, nephews, everybody. And we celebrate all the summer birthdays. Well, I was on liquids. And so, you know, for me, there was no celebration, but the joy to get to watch them and know that the future, hopefully, I can celebrate it in a different way. And last year, as we went on our week of vacation, I was able to celebrate my birthday by paddleboarding for the very first time. And that was amazing. But also along with that story goes the fact that your body changes so much. I wish I would have known this. Your body changes so much. I was, being from the Pacific Northwest, we are in the salt water. That was where I grew up, was on the salt water. Knowing that you could swim, I was buoyant. I floated forever. I bobbed, never needed a life jacket. I went to go back after losing probably, I think it was close to the first 100 pounds, and I jumped in the pool to go for water fitness, and I went straight to the bottom and I got scared. I could not float. It took me so much work to stay above the water that I had to go to the shallow end, where never had I been in the shallow end to do the water fitness, and I ended up starting to have to wear the belt and used the foam weights and stuff because I couldn't float anymore. And it is so scary after 63 years of being a bobber in the water to go to a runner on the bottom. Now I know what my husband says when he's like, I can't swim, I run on the bottom. Okay, I understand now. So knowing how much your body changes, not only in the physique, but in the metabolic type ways, is something that people should be aware of.
Yeah, because I never would have thought about that. Because I'm
scariest thing in the world.
Yeah, I would imagine. I could see how that would be, definitely. Yeah. But I mean, those are, you know, it takes strength to admit and to go through all of the things that you all three have talked about in that same situation. You know, it's hard to kind of build the airplane as you're flying, so to speak. And that's exactly what we're all doing. I mean, we are, even at, you know, 3 years post-op that I am, I'm still a toddler in this game. Like, I don't know all there is to know. Like, we're learning it as we go along. And, you know, it's awesome to have roadmaps of others who are, you know, farther post-op. But even, you know, even those people are still learning as they go. Like, we have people at Buried Asian that are 20 plus years post-op and there's still stuff they don't know. So, but it's good to have people around you that understand what you're going through right now. Like, and we're all just kind of paving the road as we go. And that's okay. Like, there's nothing wrong with that. It doesn't make you a failure. It just means that you don't know what you don't know. And that's okay. Like, society has set us up to think that if we don't know everything about everything, that, you know, somehow we're just dumb about stuff. And that's just not the way it is. it really boils down to having the intelligence to seek out the knowledge that you don't have. Because it's very easy to sit back and go, well, I don't know, and just I'll figure it out and make something up. But to actually know that there are people out there that have the knowledge that you seek, and to go find them, is only going to aid in your journey. Because if you don't do it, you know, you're going to continue to not know, and this journey is not going to, you know, it's not going to be as fulfilling as it will be, because nobody fails at it. It's just whether or not you decide to pick it up or leave it put down. If you ever put it down and walk off from it, which we've all done at one point or another, you know, you just got to come back and pick it up. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, you don't fail when you pause. You fail when you quit. When you just decide, I'm not going to do this anymore and I'm done, and you walk off from it completely, you know, that's when we've got issues. But the best thing about this community is it's always going to be here. So when you're ready to pick it back up and continue, we're still going to be here. Like, the community's not going anywhere, and you're still a bariatric patient. You still have the tool, because a lot of people think that, I've tried this before and I failed a diet, so it's just going to be the same thing. But it's not the same thing, because you have a tool now that you didn't have before. And I can tell you right now, at the 45, 48 pounds of regain that I have, I'm chipping away at that shit fast. Like, just from tracking and getting back on track and doing the things that I know fit, you know, within my guidelines, it came off. Like, it wasn't like it, because I looked at it like this insurmountable, like, I guess it's just what I weigh. And as long as I keep it under 350, I'll be fine. But when I got to talking to Rob about it, he was like, but is it really fine though? Like, are you fine where you are? I'm like, no, I'm really not. He's like, so let's do something about it. I'm like, but all this thing, I can't get, you know, how am I going to get back? I'm like, how is it going to come off now? It just sits there. And he goes, well, let's look at what you're doing. Have you been tracking them? No, I don't do that. He's like, well, how are you going to know what you need to change? I was like, I don't know. He's like, well, let's try that. So, you know, coming to find out how much I had let back in that I had no idea was harming me. And it took that data to figure that out. So one of the things that I, you know, that kind of goes into another thing I wish I would have known, was how important it was to continue to track those things. Because I just assumed, oh, well, now that I can eat a little bit more, I'm going to eat a little bit more and it's going to be fine. Because, if I'm not full, I need to be full. But that was also old mindsets creeping in and not thinking about it. But once I tracked and realized that I was back up to almost 4,000 calories a day, I'm like, oh, there's the problem right there. Like, it was very glaring to me, you know, the issue of what it was. The fat was high, the carbs were high, the calories were off the charts. So all of those things are things that I wish I would have kept an eye, built habits to keep an eye on from the beginning, because then I would have continued on the downward, you know, trend of losing. And not only, you know, plateaued after the honeymoon phase, but it wouldn't have gone back up, I feel. So, it's all part of the process. And the more information we can get out there ahead of time, I think, the more people will be able to have a more, you know, clear-cut picture of exactly what it is they're about to, you know, go after. So even if the surgery centers aren't, you know, up to par and doing what they need to be doing in that aspect, somebody's doing something for the people. And that's, you know, that's what's most important to us when it comes to that.
And I think that that tracking, I know it can set a lot of different feelings off, but I think that's one thing that would be really advisable before surgery, is to start tracking and look to see just what you were doing. And, you know, I now track. I wasn't a good tracker before, but I now track, and some days can be pretty scary, especially if you're really honest at what you're putting in.
So, I mean, and you have to be if it's going to work. Like, people are scared of difficult conversations with themselves. But at the same time, like, that's what got us here in the first place. We had the difficult conversation to have the surgery. And if we're not raw and honest with ourselves when it comes to tracking, and that's bites, licks, taste, and all the things that you put in, if it goes in your mouth, it goes on the sheet. And that's the only way you're going to know. And the only thing that changed for me, because it was triggering for me too, I didn't want to see it. I didn't want to have anything to do with it. And I know that a lot of people still, you know, won't do it. And that's, you know, that's fine. There's other ways you can figure out how to get through it. But it legitimately took me changing it to looking at it as a data point versus my worth, my value, my, and it's the same thing with the skate, because you guys, I'm a daily wear. And it took me looking at it from a data standpoint versus my worth and value for that to change. And, you know, it's not always going to be easy. You know, we make it sound easy because we've been through it. We've done it. We did the work. It's hard. It's hard as hell. It's hard to not attach. I mean, we've attached value to our weight our entire lives because society told us to. Everybody told us to. School told us to. Everybody, you know, the from the food pyramid to, you know, whatever, you know, everything you watch, nobody looked like big people. There was no representation for big people because it wasn't a good thing. It was always bad. It was always bad things. So when you boil it down, it really legitimately comes to data points. That's it. Whatever the scale says is like April says. It's your gravitational pull towards the earth, the end. Doesn't mean you're a good person, a bad person. I know horrible people that weigh 150 pounds, and I know great people that weigh 400 pounds. So that does not determine your value, I promise.
Yeah.
I think ultimately you have to find a way to talk to yourself. You know, I told someone recently, I feel like I have to advocate for myself with myself, you know? Like, the thing that I'm working on right now is motivation. Well, I'm not feeling motivated to do that. Well, how am I going to be motivated? I have to take the action, right? And so I have to find ways to talk to myself to take the action. You know, it's as simple as that. And it's also as hard as that, right? Yeah. But it's that sort of, you know, I've dieted so many times before, and it's that all or nothing mindset of like, well, it's not working. Well, I'm just going to stop. But having the courage to advocate for yourself to keep going back and tackling those hard issues.
Yeah, no, definitely. You almost become a hostage negotiator with yourself because you're holding the good you hostage because the old you wants to come back. And it's just it's a comfort thing. You know, you're comfortable doing what you've done for so many years. Like for me, I had surgery at 44. Deanne, I know you had yours at 63. And it's, you know, you build those patterns for so long and they're just ingrained in, and the comfort level of that is phenomenal. Like nobody wants to do change. Change is hard. Change sucks. Work sucks. It's all like, you know, nobody, yeah, that's why self-help stuff sells out the, you know, sells off the shelves because people love to try to do it and think about doing it. But that's why somebody like if self-help books and things like that were easy to do, people would only buy one of them and it would be a dead industry. There would be one self-help book. They would only buy one. No seminars, no webinars, no any of that shit. It would just be one book. This is how you fix it and done. But to know that something like people thrive to want to be better, but it's so damn hard. They don't want to break it down and have that hard conversation with themselves because nobody likes to do, you know, we beat ourselves up enough. We don't need a how-to instruction manual to do it because we're pretty comfortable doing it. But, you know, it's one of those things that like I always like to say, the loudest voice you'll hear all day is the one inside your head. So you have to make sure that it says nice things to you and that it's along in the journey to help you. Because like Herb said, you're not going to find, motivation's not going to come knock on the door. Nobody's coming to pick you up to go to the gym. Like if you need to go to the gym, you just got to get dressed up and go. And the more that, you know, more, the more you create, the more you do the action, it's going to create the motivation because that's how it works.
Yeah.
Megan, I know you were going to say something. What'd you have to say?
I don't know right now.
Good comment.
I think it was like when Herb said that, like having to advocate to yourself for yourself, that kind of hit me because I just like I was thinking about it and it's so true. Like I'll sit here and I feel like a crazy person sometimes because I'm having a conversation with myself out loud. Like, do you really need to eat that? And the old Megan is like, yeah, you do. You have to eat that to feel better. Or you don't have to work out. You're fine. Or you don't have to journal, your feelings will go away on their own. And then the new me, as I often refer to myself, like, okay, there's the old me, and then there's the new me, and the new me is like, no, like, get off your ass, go move, like, sit down, have time for you, because you are important now. You now know that you are worth something. You know that your self-care is worth more than anything else that has to get done. Because if you don't put yourself first, then everything else is just going to fall off. Nothing else is going to work out the way that you want it to if you're not taking care of you. And so it's just, I didn't think of it that way. Like, yeah, I'm advocating for myself to myself. And that just kind of hit me really hard.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, it's like we've said for a long time, self-care is not selfish. You have to, you know, you cannot pour from an empty cup. You've got to recharge. You've got to do things for yourself because you can't help anybody else if you let yourself get run all the way down. When that battery dies, like, that's a problem. And we've all seen it. We've all been there. We've all done it because we're all people pleasers. And that's just how we do. Like, if everybody else isn't happy, then why should we get to be happy? Why should we be the fortunate ones that get to be happy if nobody else around, you know, if everybody else isn't completely taken care of and satisfied? Well, here's the spoiler alert to that. Nobody around you is ever going to be fully satisfied. You cannot fully satisfy everyone in your life and then worry about it. It's just not going to happen. That is a sliding scale that you will never balance. So the most important thing is you have to realize is nobody's coming to take care of you. You have to take care of you. Then you can help take care of other people. Like, that's just kind of how that works. It is a very serious mental struggle to go back and forth, like Megan said, with yourself. Because, yeah, I mean, there is an old us and a new us, and the old us is going to try to win every single time. And I don't care how far post-op you are, old you's still going to be there. You can pack it in a box, you can put them in a closet, you can do whatever you want to do. They may go to sleep for a little while, but they're going to wake up eventually. Like, they're going to try to come back around because this is a struggle that lasts forever. Like, you may, and the thing about what we're doing now is we're not getting over on any of it. All we're doing is collecting the tools we need to help battle it when it comes back. We don't just build this toolbox that just sits in the corner and collects dust because we don't ever open the drawers. We're going to need all the tools that are in the box eventually at some point in time, because life doesn't stop just because we had surgery. Just because we went through difficult things, guess what? As soon as you wake up from surgery, life's still there. And life's going to life. Things are going to happen. And it's not always going to be pleasant. Like, there are going to be things that happen that are going to test your limits tremendously. You have to use the tools, including community, including people, you know, whatever your support system looks like. You have to grab a hold of that at times. Doesn't make you weak. It doesn't mean you're failing. It just means everybody needs help sometime. And that's okay. That's what we're here for. That's what the community is built on, for people who need assistance. If you guys think that me, April, and Natalie have it figured out just because we do all the things that we do, I hate to bust your bubble. I hope you don't look down on us for it, but I promise you, we talk to each other daily about all kinds of struggles. We talk to the community about our struggles. It's just, you know, it just doesn't go away, and it doesn't matter what level of the game you're on. And something's always going to come back and try to grab.
I often think of it, and I think of Sarah because of the addiction part of it, that it's harder for us we're addicted to food. I mean, I will say I know that I am addicted to food. And the therapy is no different than the therapy that someone that is, you know, addicted to a drug or alcohol or sex or shopping or anything. You're always that person. You have got to know that, you know, it's like before and after. I was there, but I will always be. We don't have that. And that's a struggle that people need to realize too. That
there's no
I'm not a bariatric patient anymore. You will always be. You will always have a struggle. It might be set deep down for a while, but it will come back.
And those old thoughts are always there, Dad, right? I had a therapist tell me once, you know, thoughts are kind of like things up on a bookshelf, and like that old thought will be there, and it comes, and I literally think about this. I talk to the thought, and I'm like, hey, no, I appreciate you, but let's just go back up on the bookshelf. bookshelf, we'll talk to you later, and bring down the new thought, right? Just because you had bariatric surgery didn't change your mind, and those thoughts are still going to be there. But what I wish I had known is that I'm going to have to keep working on new tools like community and therapy and reading and whatever it might be to engage those old thoughts and put them back up there on that bookshelf.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And it's hard. It's hard to think about because, you know, even people in different types of recovery have a hard time admitting that they're in recovery because nobody wants to be like, they want to leave the old life behind. And it's understandable because we've all, you know, we can all think of a time in our life where we didn't want to be where we were. And we're super happy to not be in that place anymore. So we feel like if we can't win this game, that somehow we're not doing it right, or we've failed, or whatever that may be. But this is a continuously moving finish line. This race will never be over. Like when, like I said before, when you're done for, when you no longer exist on the earth, that's when your race is over. So you don't just stop running a marathon short of the finish line just because, well, it got pretty hard, so I had to be done. People, you know, you choose your heart, you choose your race, you go through it, but you have to realize that you can do hard things. Like, we never thought of ourselves in that way before because we let ourselves down so many times that we got comfortable doing it. And so now we look at it and we're like, oh, well, this is very uncomfortable. I don't want to let myself down like this. So this is a new territory for us, but it's just as important because we're learning that we are important. And that's kind of one of those things that you have to dig down deep and say, I've got to keep going because there is nothing else. The other thing is going exactly back to where we were before we started. And I don't know one bariatric patient, I don't care what procedure you have, that says they want to go back to the old way. Not one. We can miss food. We can reminisce about our favorite dishes, desserts, how, you know, quantity of food we were able to eat at one point in time. But I don't know one person that's like, man, I just wish for 1 minute I could go back. Like, nah, I don't know anybody like that. So it's just one of those things that, you know, this journey is going to be hard. It's hard. It doesn't, it may get a little easier at times, but it doesn't mean it's not going to get harder at times as well. And that's okay. Because like I said, life's going to continue to happen. Like, it's not just going to stop. So when the hard times come, when things happen, you have to realize that, you know, you have tools to combat what's going on and to get you through whatever obstacle you face at the time. So just put the work in, you know, whether it be community, whether it be therapy, whether it be whatever treatment you seek, just make sure that you are raw and honest about it. So that when you get to the other side of whatever obstacle that is, you now know that when you face that obstacle again or something similar to it, you will now have the map on how to get around it versus having to struggle through it like you did before. So in wrapping up, I want one final thought from each and every one of you on what you would tell somebody who is pre-op now who may be on the fence about having this procedure. Deanne, we'll start with you.
My advice to someone that is just beginning is understand that there is a lot of work, and the mind is the, for me, the mindset is one of the most important things. I really feel like that is a big factor in a journey.
Herb, what about you?
I think I would tell a pre-op person, what would you do if you knew you couldn't fail? Because it's a chance worth taking. The surgery is a chance worth taking on yourself to live a new life. It's changed my life in innumerable ways. I'm sure it has all the rest of you as well. So that's the one, you know, the one thing that I would tell pre-op folks. I'd also tell pre-op folks to remember to take your stool softeners after surgery.
Look, I'm 3 years out and I still take Miralax every day. I don't miss it. A cap full of Miralax every single day, because trust me, if I don't, the train does not make it to the station. Megan, what about you?
I think what I would tell them pre-op is like same with Deanne, like the mindset, but also is that you are worth it now pre-op. You're worth it pre-op, you are worth it post-op, you're worth it all the time, no matter what. And even though this journey is hard and there's a lot of things that are gonna come up that you may not be prepared for, you will get through it, and that it's worth it no matter what happens. It's completely 100% worth it. With everything I've gone through, you know, pre-op, post-op, you know, that you are worth it, and that this surgery, this journey is completely 100% worth it.
Absolutely. Words of wisdom, words to live by. I want to thank you all for joining us today. Thank you. It has been an amazing conversation. I can't thank you guys enough. We appreciate you for being so vulnerable, for being open, for sharing with us, because I know this is hard. It's not easy to talk about. It's one thing to talk about it in groups inside Berry Nation, but it's another thing to, you know, talk about it when you know 500,000 people are going to listen to it. So thank you guys very much for that, for today. And thank you to the community, because without you guys, we couldn't do what we do. There, you know, there wouldn't be anybody to listen, to watch, to be involved. And, you know, we thank you from the bottom of our hearts for everything you've done to support us, for telling, you know, telling friends to tell friends to join us, to watch, sending them links, all the things, the likes, the shares, the subscribes. They mean the world to us. They honestly do, because we couldn't, you know, our support comes from supporting you guys. You guys have helped us just as much as we've ever been able to help you. So we thank you so much for that. And just remember, at the end of the day, you've got this, we've got you, and we'll see you next time.